Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. The sports leader.
Notre Dame has defeated Louisville 104-101 in five overtimes.
Run! Brian Stavisky! It's the ball game and the Irish will play for another day!
But to the Notre Dame family, I can't say anything except I've been blessed.
The Penn Kingsmen 5A state champs.
I think anytime you have a team with Skylar Diggins at the point, you better not count us out.
The Indianapolis Colts select Quentin Nelson.
Charlie Weiss's tenure as Notre Dame's football coach has come to an end.
South Bend, Washington has etched its name into Hoosier hysteria history.
Out of the 160 minor league teams, South Bend will be the best.
Three and he hits. Demetrius Jackson.
Score, Marshawn! 4-2 Bruins.
Brian Kelly, the new head coach at Notre Dame.
They score! Notre Dame, 3.7 seconds away from a spot in the national championship game.
The Clay Colonials win the state championship. They are living a dream.
Arike Okunbowale wins the national championship for Notre Dame.
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
Budweiser's weekday sports beat from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader, on this Wednesday, July the 24th of 2019. Eric Hansen from the South Bend Tribune continues his vacation. He'll be back on Monday. Sean Stiers from our WSBT studios. I'm Darren Pritchett from Four Winds Field in downtown South Bend, Indiana. The Cubs open up a little homestand tonight against the Lake County Captains. The Cleveland Indians affiliate will have the pregame tonight at 6:50. The first pitch at 7:05. Tickets are available, and probably throughout the program, you're going to hear Christmas music because, no, you're not nuts. It is Christmas in July at Four Winds Field. So, Sean, if you ever need a little extra, I can just bring it up. So you'll be very festive for this installment of Budweiser's Weekday Sports. In fact, we may just stop talking every once in a while and just let the music tell the story.
Okay. All right. I'm good with that.
So Merry Christmas.
Merry Christmas to you, too. It's
Happy Hanukkah, everyone.
Anyway, so.
Yeah, it is. At least it's not 98 degrees celebrating Christmas.
Very
so,
true.
Yeah, Lake County is going through fielding drills with Christmas music in the background, just like we always do here at Four Winds Field. On the program, our Notre Dame football fall camp preview continues. And today we're going to focus on the wide receiver position. Miles Boykin is gone. A long list of wide receivers want playing time. We'll go through some of those names in just a little bit. Bottom of the hour, we'll talk some Indianapolis Colts football. Jake Arthur, who covers the Colts for Colts.com. He's going to join us to talk about the start of camp down at Grand Park in Indianapolis. Chris Ballard, the GM of the Colts, met the media today, so a perfect opportunity to get the latest from Jake on the Colts. And you can hear Colts football all season long, including the preseason, on 96.1 WSBT for a second consecutive year. We'll have a My Five question of the day that builds off that subject. The five most difficult games. I don't know how I'm going to get through this with the Christmas music going. The five most difficult games on the Colts schedule. It's December 20th, and I'm not a big fan of Christmas music. So imagine me, bah humbug, on July the 24th.
Booing the Christmas music in July.
Yeah, that's right. I'm going to be the Philadelphia Eagle fans here at Four Winds Field. Also, next hour, Joe Bartel from RotoWire.com rejoins the program to talk about fantasy football and the running back position. Running backs, always very important when you play fantasy football. Mm-hmm. Who are the best guys to get? Who might be a bust? We'll talk about that with Joe in just about an hour. Also coming up, rapid fire, Chicago Cubs report, including some not pretty numbers surrounding the Cubs' road record and what they have in front of them. We'll give you all the details on that coming up in just a little bit as we lead into South Bend Cubs baseball tonight at 6:50 with a 7:05 first pitch. I don't know how I'm going to do this. Santa Claus is breaking my concentration. All right, let's talk some Notre Dame football. We're excited for another season of Fighting Irish football on 96.1 WSBT. Game number one, Monday, September 2nd at 8 o'clock. It's the Irish down in Louisville to take on a rebuilding Cardinals program, and of course we will have our full day worth of coverage here on WSBT Radio. Idaho game day, Tim Growl is going to be back for I think his 20th season as a part of game day, and it'll be the 48th season of that program. Pretty remarkable. And from that point we will take over on Budweiser's Game Day Sports Beat. Since the kickoff is at 8 o'clock, we will be on the air from 5 until 7. We'll have all the play-by-play right here on WSBT Radio. And then we've got the post-game, as always, after the ball game. And a full day's worth of coverage. I don't know if we're going to have college game day this year. I don't think that's been decided as of yet.
Oh, yeah,
I hope so. It's always fun to have the simulcast or the radio cast of ESPN's college game day when we have the opportunity to do so. And with a night game, we have the opportunity to do so. Probably very often this year, including the game against Georgia, as we found out yesterday, under the lights down in Athens. I have to admit, that's a place I'd love to go see a game at. If there's,
I think so too,
a list of places I'd like to go at some point in the top 10 would be Georgia. That just seems like an amazing atmosphere. You got the hedges surrounding the field. You got Uga and his air-conditioned doghouse. I mean, what more do you want?
A lot of the SEC places, Georgia, LSU, Alabama. I mean, I think there'd be a lot of great stops down there.
Great thing about Alabama, you go to the game, if you don't have a seat about the third quarter, all the students leave, so you can just sit in the student section.
Perfect.
And Nick Saban doesn't like that. He gets all grumpy. It's like when you play Stetson and you're up 56-0, do you really want college kids to keep their focus on a game that's over, that they just have no excitement level about? I get it, Nick, but sorry, not going to buy that one. Yeah. But anyway, let's get to some football conversation. The Fighting Irish wide receiver spots. You got a 3 wide receiver starting lineup as the norm. Miles Boykin is gone. He left early for the NFL draft, now a member of the Baltimore Ravens. And Boykin had a really solid year last year. He built on that great catch he had against LSU the previous year. Boykin, 59 catches, 872 yards with 8 touchdowns. So who is coming back? Well, here's the main nucleus, at least in terms of guys with a pretty good reception totals coming back. And, of course, the focus will be on Chase Claypool, the Canadian. 50 catches last year for 639 yards and 4 touchdowns. Chris Fink, the very dependable slot receiver, 49 grabs, 571 yards, 11.7 yards per catch, 2 touchdowns. And then you go a little deeper down the line, this is kind of where the question marks begin. You've got Michael Young with 7 catches for 138 and a touchdown. Kevin Austin, you know, what will his role be? It seems like a guy with plenty of potential, trying to figure things out, possibly in practice and off the field. I think he was a trait guy that Brian Kelly talked about. Yep. I think I'm characterizing that okay. Austin had 5 catches for 90 yards last year. As we kick off our conversation, let's go back to the spring and hear from the Fighting Irish head coach Brian Kelly as he evaluated the wide receiver position.
You have some established players that can play at a high level with Claypool and Chris Fink. You don't have that at the linebacker position. Nobody's has the tackling numbers that Claypool and Fink have at the wide receiver position. They have made plays.
I was looking more at that third receiver.
Okay, well, the third receiver doesn't have that kind of production. But I think we've got a number of guys from Michael Young, I think Joe Wilkins had a really good day today coming off, his cartilage. He's a guy that will get a ton of work, as you see over the next few days. You'll get a chance to observe him. I think he's a guy that will continue to get some more work. Braden Lindsay has looked really good in the spring. We're playing Lawrence Keys, so he's given Chris Fink a blow. So, you know, certainly a number of guys that we think can, you know, give us the kind of play that we need out on the perimeter.
Brian Kelly talking about the wide receiver position. Some in-depth analysis there from the Fighting Irish head coach. So I guess simply, Sean, when you look at the wide receiver position, do you feel like it's going to be a strength for this Notre Dame football team?
I do. We've had all this upside with Chase Claypool, and now that he's moving out to where Miles Boykin was last year, he was second to Miles Boykin in both touchdown catches as well as receptions and receiving yards. He had a really strong spring, the strongest spring that we've seen him have, and the most consistent as well. There weren't days where he was really good and then days where it's like, what's going on with this guy? So he's there. Chris Fink was right behind Claypool last year. He's there in the slot. Yeah, there are some questions at the other spots just because of some inexperience. Michael Young had another solid spring. And then you've got all these four sophomores Brian Kelly mentioned between Kevin Austin, Braden Lindsay, Lawrence Keys, and Joe Wilkins. You've got some speed in that group and some young guys waiting to kind of show their mark. So I definitely think it can be a strength for him this year, especially with the guy who's going to be getting him the ball, Ian Book.
Well, that helps, that's for sure. It's a guy that you really feel good about throwing the football in Ian Book, especially on the short and medium depth throws. He worked a lot on the long throws during spring practice. Hopefully that's an area of improvement. Claypool as the guy, as the wide receiver, let's see how he handles that.
Yeah.
He was very good in the spring. I remember one day he and Troy Pride just had some great one-on-one battles. And there was a point where Chase got a little frustrated. He took the football and fired it against the wall. He went and picked it up, by the way, and brought it back. He was a good guy there.
Yeah.
But I like that intensity. I like the fire. I like the fact that Chase wants this. You can tell he wants to be great. I think he was a guy Brian Kelly always talked about in practice, doing the little things to prepare for a game was something he had to kind of figure out. And it sure seems like he's done so. You look at Fink, he's just one of those very dependable guys, and I hope that doesn't come across as a negative, but he is a slot receiver that's going to be called on to make plays like he did against Michigan for the touchdown, and also that key touchdown against USC when the Irish didn't have much going on and they were down by a score of 10-0. So Fink, in two of the Irish's biggest games, he came up big for this football team. And then from there, you kind of just look at the group. You see a lot of talent, and you just wonder who's going to step forward. I'd really love to see Kevin Austin become one of these key guys, because at times in the spring, just looked like he could be a difference maker. But you got to do it every day in practice. You got to bring it every day. That's and right. Do the right things off the field, in the weight room, to have that opportunity. So I think it's going to be a bit of a revolving door. Maybe in fall camp, trying different things still. And I even think, Sean, during the season, you're going to see different combinations. Lindsay's an intriguing guy. Michael Young, Austin. There's just a lot of parts to work with, and let's see how they're all going to fit together. Plus, you get guys out of the backfield that can catch the ball, and you got some really good tight ends. So a lot of interesting choices for Ian Book. All right, here is Irish offensive coordinator Chip Long from the spring talking about our slot guy, and that is Chris Fink.
Fink's unbelievable. You know, our first year, just because he was slight, probably didn't play as much as he wanted to, attacked the weight room, had a great year for us last year. We relied heavily on him, and he's done a great job of being a leader for us offensively in that receiver room. Every time you see him catch a ball, I know you guys have been to a lot of practice, he's accelerating through the back of the end zone, learning to play when he's tired, really pushing himself. I mean, you look out on the field, nobody's as fast as Chris, just because of the effort and speed he plays at, and just the confidence he has in the offense of knowing where to be and how to get there. It has helped him, and you can just see the chemistry with him and Ian, and, you know, really proud of him. He's done a great job this spring for us.
I remember leading into the Clemson game, one of our media sessions, I had the chance to talk to Fink, and he mentioned one of the differences for him from the year before to last year was the fact he went down to Texas, and I think it was an agility or a speed coach that he worked with, and he improved his ability to come out of his moves much quicker. He put that foot in the ground, and he can accelerate so much better. He felt like that was a big reason why he played a more efficient wide receiver for the Irish in 2018. He's back in the slot once again, and a veteran player on this football team. And he is a guy that you kind of know what you're going to get. He runs the routes the right way. And I just hope there are opportunities down the field for Chris to make some plays in the secondary, because I'd love to see that deep passing game give that Irish running game just a little more room to work with, just to see what Jafar Armstrong and the crew can do game in and game out, because I think they're going to need a little more help than they did last year.
Yeah, you mentioned his explosion coming in coming out of his breaks, and I think didn't really think about that being the thing that he worked on, but I mean, that is kind of one of the defining qualities that he has that we saw from him last year. And just like you said, there are going to be some opportunities, because that slot being a little bit smaller, 5'11", all those guys kind of fit that profile for the most part. It's easy for them to kind of get lost in traffic a little bit and then end up with some chances to make some big mm-hmm. plays. He had some last year, and now it's just a matter of getting it to him, finishing those plays like that this year with the quarterback book being able to make the connection more consistently.
Sean Steyers, Darren Pritchett with you. Notre Dame football fall camp preview, focusing on the wide receiver position. And if I may, the Eric Hansen IndyInsider.com depth chart shows Chase Claypool as an outside wide receiver, backed up by Kevin Austin and Javon McKinley. Also, another outside receiver spot, it's Michael Young, backed up by Braden Lindsay and Joe Wilkins. And then you've got that slot receiver, Chris Fink, with Lawrence Keys behind him. And Eric has the freshman from Edwardsville, Illinois, Kendall Abdul-Rahman, number 3 on the depth chart at the slot receiver position. So a lot of young guys. I mean, you just look at the depth chart and freshmen and sophomore that are listed. Micah Jones, Ramon, Lawrence Keys. You've got Kevin Austin that shows up. Also, you've got Braden Lindsay and Joe Wilkins and Cam Hart. So a lot of young guys for Chip Long to work with. And here's what the Irish offensive coordinator in the spring had to say about the development of this young group.
Well, you know, I saw their demeanor in the weight room every day. So you have that. You got a chance. I thought they did a nice job of really attacking the spring every day. Obviously, I had a lot of confidence in him because I had a lot of confidence in Dell Alexander. He's been with me for a long time. And those kids know how to work. You have two great leaders in Chase and Fink there. So, you know, it's not – they get to learn from two great ones. When you have that, it helps with the transition. And they've called the ball well. You know, that was my question marks with them. How are they going to be able to handle press, getting knocked around? And they've done a great job bringing that physicality, and it's showing up in their ability to make competitive catches one-on-one.
So, Sean, let me ask you, from the freshman and sophomore wide receiver group, is there one guy that you're most interested in seeing in fall camp, whether he plays or not, but just a guy you got your eye on?
I'd say a guy I got my eye on is Lawrence Keys, because I was really impressed with the spring that he had. And he, on that very first day of camp last year, he was able to make some plays downfield down there at Culver. And he's just a guy, again, he's in that profile of Fink, that slot, that smaller guy, but he's got some speed to him as well. And he can make some plays downfield. So he's a guy that I'm really looking forward to seeing once camp starts.
On the other end of the spectrum, more on Chris Fink, who has a little different role on this football team. He's now kind of one of the grizzly veterans on this roster, and Chris talked about the responsibility of being a veteran player during the spring.
I'm not going to change who I am, but understanding that I'm, you know, an old guy on the team now, one of the oldest, if not the oldest, and I'm in a leadership role, so I know that people look up to me and that what I say has some weight. So, like you said, the vocal part, it's definitely playing a bigger role now.
Well, Fink has seen a lot and been a part of some really good offensive performances, and he's had a chance now to see these young wide receivers we've been talking about, and here's Fink's thoughts on this group.
Yeah, it's fun to see them finally get some more reps. I remember when I was a young guy, and spring ball's a time where you can kind of show what you're worth, and I really like the young guys we have. They all have the right attitude. They all work for it. They all want it. So it's nice to see them coming along.
Well, all these guys are going to be in for a very interesting road game down in Athens. With that being game number three, everybody's going to grow up real quick in that environment. You got Louisville on the road. It's nice they get a road game test in early. Then you come home to hopefully just beat the daylights out of New Mexico before you go into that Georgia game. And New Mexico could be a game. I don't want to treat it like the Ball State game last year and just say, well, this is a game, you get the lead early and you play all the young guys. Well, let's win the football game first against New Mexico, and then your hope is that you can get some of these guys like a Lawrence Keys, a Kevin Austin, more time on the field so you have more options and people more ready, because the lights are going to be a little brighter between the hedges on September 21st.
Yeah, I mean, that's an opportunity to sort of make up for what happened against Ball State, maybe Vanderbilt even a little bit, but really Ball State last year. Because when you look at the way Ball State was able to push Notre Dame that day, the week after Michigan, they did not have a good season the rest of the year. They ended up, I think, with 3 wins it was last year. So it's a chance coming out of that season opener. They'll have that next weekend off and then play New Mexico after that. As you said, they shouldn't be thinking about, okay, we're going to get all these guys in or whatever it happens to be. Take care of your business, and then what happens after that happens, whether you're able to get some guys in or not.
Michael Young, possibly a starting receiver for the Fighting Irish this year. 5'10", 190, a junior. As I mentioned, 7 catches last year, 138 yards, and a touchdown. Here's Michael Young on what he expects his role to be.
I can be the speed guy. I can, you know, go get it on a post or, you know, on a go. I can be the intermediate guy, the hitches, the, you know, the digs. I can be the, you know, short, quick guy to try to, you know, take up a 70. At this point in my, you know, my career, I understand the coaches are asking me to do something that they need me to do. That's what I do. So however you guys categorize it, it doesn't matter. I can be anything you want. I can be the physical guy. I can be the blocker. I can, you know, try to be the Chase Claypool. I mean, I don't have the stature for it, but I'll definitely get there and give you a good fight. I could be, like I said, I could be the speed guy. I can be the guy like, you know, like a Braden Lindsay, you know, like a Keys that are considered just true speed guys. I mean, I would consider myself a true speed guy because I feel like I'm fast, but I could definitely be that guy as well. So.
Well, big opportunity for Michael Young in fall camp to solidify his status in this wide receiving core. Behind Young at one of the outside receiver positions is sophomore from Oregon, Braden Lindsay, the track star, 5'11", 184. Here's a comment from Brian Kelly from the spring where he's asked about Lindsay. He does talk a little bit about Michael Young as well, two guys competing for a job. And here's what BK had to say about Lindsay with the little Michael Young mixed in.
Well, I think anybody that has been in our strength and conditioning program and has really shown, you know, a dedication to it is going to put on a coat of armor and get, you know, thicker without getting slower. You know, Michael Young has been the same. If you look at him, Michael has put on weight, good weight, and he's faster. So he just needed that, you know, weight to get out there and cover up DBs and do his job, catch the ball in traffic, and be more confident as a football player. Still got to catch it, and you got to catch it consistently. But he hasn't lost up. He's got that explosive speed that we recruited. But certainly a stronger player is a more confident player.
Well, I can say this, Sean, and I know you'll agree. With the opportunity we have to watch a lot of practices in the spring, and you had the chance to see more than I did due to my hockey schedule, but the competition between wide receivers and corners were intense. There were some great matchups in the spring, and you feel like the Irish have some pretty good corners and pretty good wide receivers. The great thing is every day was a little different, not one side dominated. So as we kind of talk about the receiving core, I'm just going to kind of bring in the secondary. Just going by what we witnessed in the spring, it sure feels like both sides got better competing against each other, and I don't know if I could really say one side won a majority of those one-on-one battles.
I agree, because it kind of went back and forth. I mean, that's the way, whether it was Troy Pride Jr. and Chase Claypool or any of these guys out there. And I mean, it's we've continued to see that over the last few years with each side pushing each other. You can talk about that with the defensive line and the offensive line as well these last couple of years. They've really helped each other improve. So some of these position battles are going to be fun to watch as a result, because you can tell these guys have been pushing each other in that back and forth competition, and then guys like Young and Lindsey fighting for a job. They'll be pushing each other as well throughout fall camp.
Sean Stiers, Darren Pritchett talking Notre Dame football in our fall camp preview as we take a look at the wide receiver position today. We'll have a new camp series preview on tomorrow's program. Coming up next, we're going to shift gears to the National Football League. Jake Arthur covers the Colts for Colts.com. Camp is underway down in Grand Park. We'll talk all things Indianapolis Colts next from 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader. Sports Beat continues, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds. By Train Heating and Cooling and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. I'm Darren Pritchett with the South Bend Cubs at Four Winds Field. It is South Bend hosting Lake County. 6:50 pregame on WSBT Radio. Sean Stiers back in our WSBT studios. For the second consecutive year, Indianapolis Colts football is on 96.1 WSBT. First preseason game on August the 8th. The Colts last year started 1-5. They then won 9 of their last 10, finished at 10-6, grabbed the final wild card spot in the AFC, and then knocked off Houston 21-7 in a wild card game, and then lost to Kansas City in the divisional round 31-13. Colts, a very intriguing team, high expectations, I think, outside the building, and it's fair to say inside the building for 2019. And joining us is Jake Arthur, who covers the Colts for Colts.com. He joined us a couple of times last year. It's great to have him back on the program as Colts camp gets underway at fantastic Grand Park down in Indianapolis. Jake, it's Darren. Good to be with you once again. Hope you had a great summer. How are you?
Hey, absolutely. Yeah, I'm good, guys. Thanks for having me back.
Well, a perfect day to have you on. Chris Ballard met the media today. The Colts general manager has done an amazing job building this Colts roster up. Coming off the 1-5 start and then finishing 10-6, winning a playoff game. Jake, do you have a feel inside the building, the confidence level this group has coming into 2019?
I think they're very confident, especially since they've got a bunch of young guys. They've tasted success right away. But it's kind of controlled and tempered confidence. They've got a great leader in Frank Reich, who knows how to kind of keep them in line and know that they haven't accomplished anything yet. Yes, they're probably a little bit ahead of schedule by already being a playoff team, making it to the second round. But that's not their goal. Their goal is to be have continued excellence over a pretty good stretch of years. They don't want to just be a flash in the pan. They want to worry about getting better all the time. So that's actually something that Chris Ballard touched on today. There are some expectations nationally now. They're kind of a popular pick to go deep. But, you know, you just got to ignore those press clippings and worry about yourself getting better, or you're not going to accomplish what you actually want to.
Jake, big difference this year compared to last year. Obviously, they had so many questions going into last year's camp, from Andrew Luck's shoulder and just the fact that they did have a new head coach in Frank Reich and a lot of new guys on the staff. So what are maybe the biggest questions that they have going into this year's camp? Because it seems like there are definitely a lot fewer, at least a lot, they're not as big this year as they were last year.
Oh, yeah. Well, last year there was some real concerns. This year I think we just have questions. Some of them have already kind of been answered, I guess you could say. Andrew Luck and Darius Leonard, neither of them were participants in the on-field stuff over the offseason. No OTAs, no minicamp, just because they were coming back from some injuries and the team was bringing them along slowly. But as of today, we've learned that they should be out there. They'll be brought along slowly. At least Andrew will, according to Chris Ballard. But Darius Leonard told us today that he is supposed to be out there tomorrow. So that being maybe your two most notable players, at least on either side of the ball, it's good to know that they're expected to participate after not during the offseason. Then I guess you kind of got to look at some position battles and, you know, also figure out, is the pass rush going to be really good? Because, I mean, adding Justin Houston, I mean, that's a former All-Pro. I think everyone's pretty much cautiously optimistic from the outside looking at that acquisition. We've seen the kind of ball he can play before. But at his age and injury history, you know, what's the expectation now? And then in terms of position battles, you know, in the past, maybe when the roster wasn't so deep, you know, position battles were more of, well, somebody has to win this. Now it's kind of, you're almost dreading the outcome because it means some good player is probably going to get cut at the end of the day. Once the preseason is over, there are going to be some good players that don't make the roster just because it's so much deeper this time around.
Jake Arthur from Colts.com, our guest on WSBT Radio, Indianapolis Colts football once again on WSBT Radio this fall. Jake, to build on your position competition conversation, along the offensive line, we know Quentin Nelson's going to take care of one of the guard spots. Is there much competition right now along the offensive line? Is it mainly for depth, or do you see any position battles that could be blossoming there?
I think primarily it will be for depth. Chris Ballard mentioned today, he talked about some camp battles and mentioned the offensive line, and if I remember correctly, everything he mentioned specifically between players, they were all kind of guys that were behind the top five. I think we all saw that starting five do so well in the second half of last season that you kind of don't want to mess with it, you know. So I think primarily we're looking at battles between guys like LaRaven Clark, Joe Haig, just those guys who, and Evan Bain. Guys who would be the first ones to go into the lineup if someone went down. That's kind of a good problem this year is, you know, no one ever stays completely healthy. Injuries are a reality in the NFL. But if someone goes down, then there might be a starting level player going in to fill in for them. So while I don't think anyone in the starting five, I don't think they're really going to be in danger unless their performance, just for whatever reason, really starts to slip. But I would imagine these position battles for kind of second and third string, I expect those to be pretty competitive.
Jake, Quentin Nelson obviously had a lot to live up to, especially when you consider he's a guard taken at number six overall like he was last year. When you think about the season that he had, is it safe to say that he just exceeded everyone's expectations?
I think so. Anytime you take a guard or center, just any interior offensive lineman that early in the draft, I think the thought is, well, they better be good. Which, you know, I think if they make the Pro Bowl, that's probably like, okay, well, yeah, they're pretty good. Not only did he do that, he made first team All Pro, meaning best of the best, elite. You know,
right.
that pretty much considered him the best left guard in the league. So that was pretty substantial for that to happen as a rookie. And I don't know if you guys have followed my work at Colts.com over the off season, but I've found it pretty difficult to find new ways to describe how well he's done because I've reported on pretty much every all NFL or all under 25 list that people have written him into over the offseason. It seems like it's been about 100 of them.
Was that Quentin today that walked into camp with an Old Spice T-shirt on?
Yes, Old Spice t-shirt, but also most importantly, a nice handlebar mustache.
Yeah, I saw that. Fantastic. Jake Arthur, our guest here on WSBT Radio. You think back to last year, 11-man draft class, and boy, oh boy, did they hit the jackpot with guys like Nelson and Leonard. A 10-man draft class in 2019, Jake. Are there one or two players that you believe will impact this team right away from that draft class?
I've been asked this recently, and although I'll give you my answer, but it's not as bad as it sounds. So last year they needed guys to really step in immediately and fill those roles. This year I don't really see it that way. They return most of their starters, and the guys that they did draft, while I think they would be capable of contributing right away if they were needed to, I don't think they're going to be needed to. I think they'll have a little more opportunity to develop behind some of the kind of the older guys or the established starters. Because if you look at it, Rocky has seen that. That's, you know, that was their first pick. The Colts are jacked at cornerback right now. You know, whose snaps is he going to take? Is it going to be DeSeer, Moore, Quincy Wilson? Jalen Collins is really good. Nate Harrison has been a really good slot corner. It's going to be hard to earn playing time. I think more realistically, he can develop. Now, someone, if I did have to pick someone who's going to contribute right away, I think it would be Paris Campbell. Just because of the talk about him right after the draft, Coach Reich was just, he fell in love with him at the combine, and then he managed to get him on his team. So he's been thinking of ways of how he's going to use Paris Campbell for months and months now. And it just so happens that a lot of Campbell's strengths fit in perfectly with what the Colts offense is all about. So while there's a lot of mouths to feed in that offense, I would think Paris Campbell is going to get a lot of touches manufactured for him. So I think of any of the rookies, he's probably going to be the heaviest contributor if I had to pick.
I wanted to ask you about the other Notre Dame guy, Mathias Farley. He only played in 5 games last year because he broke his hand against the Patriots. Where does he stand going into camp this year?
I think he's beloved by everyone in that building as a player and a person, to be honest with you. I think we've all seen him play starting-level football. And the good news is, maybe not as a reserve, because the Colts use more than 2 safeties quite often, especially in their dime packages. You'll see 3 safeties. And Farley has been at least that 3rd safety. We've seen him have to start. But kind of the plan is for him to be the next man up behind the starting 2. I think, you know, as long as he picks up where he left off and looks just as good as he always has, then, you know, I think he should be relatively secure. Now, you never can say that anyone is like a slam dunk to be safe unless it's someone like a Pro Bowler or all pro. But I think they really, really like Mathias in that organization. He's a good player. He steps in and does exactly what he's asked to do. He's a good contributor on special teams. I think you absolutely need people like him on your roster. So if I was betting, I would say he's got a really good chance. But we've seen crazy things happen before.
Yeah. Jake Arthur from Colts.com, our guest. How would you assess the AFC South in 2019?
Well, if I had to guess, I'd say it's going to be better this year than last year. Now, there were 3 teams competing up until the very last week. But maybe the level of play will be better. Jacksonville, I've got to think they're going to finish better than they did before. You know, Nick Foles, he's not an elite quarterback, in my opinion, but he's an upgrade from what they had, which should mean that it brings some stability to their offense. They've got some nice pieces on that offense. They maybe don't have a dominant receiver or tight end yet or anything, but I think they've got guys you can get by with. They showed they want to build that offensive line a little bit more. I think Juwan Taylor was a great pickup for them. And then defensively, until they actually fall off, you have to assume they're still going to have a pretty good defense. The Tennessee Titans have been doing something kind of similar. Their tight end, or not tight end, their quarterback situation, you know, a little bit up in the air. You never know what Mariota's health is going to be like. But they have good pieces all over the place on both sides of the field. At receiver, I really like pairing A.J. Brown with Corey Davis. Their defense, although they lost Brian Arakpo and Derek Morgan to retirement, they, you know, in my opinion, that's been upgraded with Cameron Wake and then Harold Landry hopefully stepping into a starting role in year two. I think that defense is going to be just as good, if not better, as last year. And then the Texans, you know, they won the regular season AFC South title. So technically, until they're knocked off, that, you know, they're the reigning champions. So I think it'll be a better division than it was last year. Although no one was terrible, I think the product on the field will be better from all four teams.
Jalen Ramsey had his unique entrance at Jaguars camp with the showing up in the armored truck and the guy with the bullhorn earlier today. Anything really stand out or any statements made with player arrivals today at Colts camp, Jake?
Yeah, actually, I kind of made some mental notes on there. So Quentin Nelson, you know, of course, showing up right. with his handlebar mustache. T.Y. Hilton, that everyone always wants to see what T.Y. is going to show up in. He had a T.Y. shirt on and a ghost hat, and he's always kind of known for his backpacks as well. He had a nice Black Panther Wakanda Forever backpack on today. But my personal favorite was Eric Ebron. He was wearing a Camp Nowhere shirt from kind of inspired by Dustin from Stranger Things. So I was a big fan of that one.
He is Jake Arthur. He covers the Indianapolis Colts for Colts.com. Check out his latest work. If you are a Colts fan or an NFL fan, again, Colts.com. Jake, great to catch up with you for a little bit. We look forward to talking to you from time to time as the Colts get their season underway.
Yeah, absolutely, guys. Thanks again for having me.
Take care.
Bet Jake Arthur from Colts.com joining us. Colts football right here on WSBT Radio, the first preseason game on August the 8th. So what are the five most difficult games on the Colts schedule? That is the topic for the My 5 question of the day, which is next on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
One question, five answers. This is the My 5 question of the day on Michiana's sports leader, 96.1 FM, WSBT.
Today's My 5 question of the day, the five most difficult games on the Indianapolis Colts 2019 schedule. Mr. Darren Pridgett will be answering. Number 5, Darren.
I may regret this. At Pittsburgh, I didn't put on the list.
They don't have an easy schedule by any means.
No, there's a lot of good choices for this list, and I left the Steelers off. No Antonio Brown, no Le'Veon Bell, though James Conner was very good at running back. I know they're high on Schuster, but I just took a chance here. I went with Atlanta with number 5. They've spent a lot of money on defense to add some depth. They had a lot of injuries last year. I know they lost a defensive back to an ACL yesterday. With the weapons they have on offense, and I know Jake Arthur, our last guest, talked about the quality and the depth at corner for the Colts. It'll be tested against Ridley and Jones and that passing attack. So I'm going to put Atlanta, that's a home game, at number 5.
Number 4.
I'm going to put Houston on the road, even though the Colts went down to Houston and beat them in the playoffs 21-7. Texans should be outstanding once again. You're dealing with Deshaun Watson. So week 12, I'm going to say that's going to be one of the more difficult divisional games for the Colts. So I'm going to put the Texans on the road at number 4.
Texans won the division last year.
Mm-hmm.
Number 3.
I mean, Sean, you see the 3 I have left. You could actually put these in any order.
Yeah.
The one thing that separated the 3 that I'm going to mention, number 3, I put the Chargers in week 1. It's a road game. It's not exactly an intimidating environment in that soccer stadium
for
the Chargers. So compared to the other two I'm going to mention, that made it easier. Melvin Gordon holding out the Charger running back. They have a lot of quality on offense and defense. It is an AFC championship caliber team. And I've got the Chargers, the 3rd toughest game on the Colts schedule.
Okay, number 2.
It's hard to put this team at number two, but I've got the Saints on the road at the Superdome. Drew Brees is back. Kamara, bigger role at the running back position. He is the go-to guy now. They got Thomas at receiver. You know, the defense, you never know with New Orleans. They were pretty good last year, but how are they going to bounce back from the controversy in the NFC Championship game? As long as Drew Brees is playing, they've got a fighting chance. So New Orleans, the second toughest game on the Colts schedule.
Darren's five most difficult games on the Colts schedule. Number five, Atlanta. Number four, at Houston. Number three, at the Chargers. Number two, at New Orleans. And the toughest game is?
Got to go to Arrowhead to face those wackos there in Kansas City. Chiefs have ruled the roost in the AFC West. You're going to have to take them out in order to win the West if you're the Chargers, and they'd love to have a little help from the Colts in beating Kansas City, but Chiefs beat them 31-13, so there's a gap, and the Colts have to go back there in Week 5, so to me, the Chiefs, who have the best chance to knock off the Patriots, that would be the toughest game on the schedule.
All right.
And that's going to do it for the My 5. We'll take a 30-second timeout. We'll continue with more Sports Beat next on WSBT. Well, coming up on Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat in 7 minutes, Joe Bartel, who joined us last week, will rejoin us from RotoWire.com and RotoWire Fantasy Football Magazine. He's going to help you with your fantasy football draft as we focus on the running back position. We have rapid fire, Chicago Cubs report, the road woes could be a big concern coming down the stretch for the Chicago Cubs. More on that in just a little bit. Right now, top of the hour, WSBT South Bend.
Celebrating 25 years on the air. This is Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat on 96.1 WSBT, the sports leader.
Notre Dame is moving on to the Elite Eight. Taylor, he stopped. Notre Dame wins.
Lick Leitner and Smallbone have been the catalysts for South Bend St. Joseph's.
Jalen Smith verbally committed to play football at Notre Dame.
And Notre Dame is going to Omaha for the first time since 1957.
Rebound, run the wall, middle. Score! The Irish are going to the championship game!
Congratulations, Tom, on the championship.
Thank you. We brought one back to South Bend finally.
Ryan Newman, Roger Penske win the Daytona 500.
Leitner going to try to sneak it ahead. Touchdown, SC!
Can't express how sorry I am towards Matt Tye.
And the White Sox have won the World Series.
I don't pay a damn bit of attention to what people on the outside say, because I understand none of them, though.
York now, in front, Ogilvie, they score! They score! Notre Dame to the Frozen Four!
The Colts of Indianapolis win Super Bowl 41.
The Fighting Irish are national champions in 2001. Notre Dame! Notre Dame! Notre Dame is the national champion!
Is that the play that will seal the playoff bid for Fighting Irish?
Here are your hosts, Darren Pritchett and Sean Stiers.
And Budweiser's Weekday Sports Beat for this Wednesday, presented by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Train Heating and Cooling and by the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Sean Stiers from our WSBT studios in Mishawaka. I'm Darren Pritchett at Four Winds Field in South Bend. The South Bend Cubs open up a three-game series against the Cleveland Indians affiliate, the Lake County Captains, tonight. Our pregame coverage starts at 6:50, and the first pitch at 7:05. In just a second, we'll talk to Joe Bartel, football writer for RotoWire.com, fantasy football expert. We're going to focus on the running back position with Joe. We've got rapid fire coming up in just a little bit. And right before we get to South Bend Cubs baseball, we will have our Chicago Cubs report here on WSBT Radio. And right now, the Chicago Cubs lead the San Francisco Giants by a score of 4-1. Cubbies got a home run from Chris Bryan today. He did leave the ball game with apparently a little bit of knee soreness. Not expected to be anything serious, but Cubs are being very cautious with Bryan, whose WAR is now over 4. He is in the top 5 in baseball in that particular category. Tyler Chatwood started today, weaved and dodged his way through a few innings, and the Cubs bullpen has done a very nice job today. and the Cubs are trying to salvage the final game of the three-game series against those red-hot San Francisco Giants, who are just storming hot right now. But let's talk some fantasy football. Joe Bartel from RotoWire.com, their fantasy football expert, joined us last week. We talked quarterbacks and wide receivers. We're going to spend a little time on the running back position today. And, of course, you can follow along. The RotoWire Fantasy Football Magazine is out with over 350 player projections, rankings, and outlooks. And, of course, a lot of information as well at RotoWire.com. Joe, it's Darren Pritchett again. Good to be with you. How are you today?
I'm doing well, Darren. I'm excited to talk about the running backs, and you know what? It's kind of an important position overall when you're talking fantasy football. So it's a great discussion to have, and I'm looking forward to it.
And let's build on that particular thought, because in the RotoWire Fantasy Football Magazine, there's a mock draft, and in the first round in a 14-team mock draft, the first six selections were all running backs, and it ended up being 10 of the first 14 picks were running backs. So as we look at this, let's go with a 12 or a 14-team format. How necessary is it, Joe, for a first-round pick to be a running back in 2019?
Well, that's an interesting conversation. It depends a lot on how you want to construct your roster, and I think in a PPR format, you can get by a little bit more with not having to use a first round or second round pick on a running back spot. But generally speaking, I think you have to kind of do that. And especially in today's fantasy football, those first three rounds, if you're not able to land a running back, you're in a little bit of hot water. I don't think the zero running back strategy, which was kind of a popular thing the past, three or four years, is really something that can work this time around. So Saquon Barkley, Christian McCaffrey, Ezekiel Elliott, Alvin Kamara, those are four running backs that are going to go off the board just about every single time in those first four picks. Now, you can argue where they're going to go, but for the most part, it's those four guys. David Johnson, Melvin Gordon are also two running backs that I like quite a bit among the top six to seven picks overall. And then we start looking down the list. You get to maybe 18, 19 running backs, and you don't really feel great about anybody that's getting a guaranteed timeshare, whether it's a running back or like a Tariq Cohen who's receiving. So I think you kind of have to get a running back in the first two rounds, and preferably you get some of the best guys in that first round.
Joe, this is Sean, and when you look at Zeke Elliott right now, I mean, he's a guy who's been a workhorse for Dallas, obviously, these last few years, but he's got the contract situation right now. So how much do you sort of look at that, especially when you had the Le'Veon Bell situation last year?
Yeah, the Le'Veon Bell thing is everyone's scared, and rightfully so. I mean, he was a guy that was going in the first or second overall pick last year, and who I, and along with just about everybody else in the fantasy industry, had no reason to be concerned. We've had players hold out in the past, certainly, but there was never a point in really anybody's lives covering fantasy football where you're like, oh yeah, this really prominent fantasy player, this really prominent player on a team that needs to be having their starting running back for playoff aspirations, oh, he's going to hold out one game, much less an entire season. And now, of course, that happened, and we have to be a little bit more astute about the Ezekiel Elliott and Melvin Gordon of the world saying, hey, I want some more money, that'd be awesome. I'm not that worried about it. I'm going to continue to have that same thought process. And if I get burned again, I get burned again. That's kind of how I'm thinking it. I know Melvin Gordon's an elite talent. I know Ezekiel Elliott's a great talent as well. So I want to have those guys on my fantasy team. And if other people want to fade them and drop them down a little bit on their boards, more power to it. I feel like I'm going to get a valuable player at a spot that maybe he shouldn't be for a reason that we're basing off of Le'Veon Bell and his deteriorating relationship with the Steelers, where we know that's not the case with Melvin Gordon and the Chargers, and we know it's not the case with Ezekiel Elliott and the Cowboys, particularly Elliott, who kind of is the lifeblood of that Cowboys offense, and they too have playoff aspirations, Super Bowl aspirations. So I'm not worried about either situation. I think any means of docking them is probably a little bit overblown.
Joe Bartel from RotoWire talking fantasy football running backs on WSBT Radio in South Bend. Le'Veon Bell did not play last year, now a Jet. Todd Gurley played a lot early, then there was some knee issues. He really wasn't even a big factor in the Super Bowl. When you look at Bell and Gurley, Joe, these are first-round draft picks, but do you have any concern about them going into this particular season? Or are they just automatic first-round picks? You don't even worry about it.
You know, I think I'm probably going counterculture to a lot of people's opinions, certainly in the fantasy industry, but I'm not as concerned about taking them in the first round as most of my colleagues are out there right now. Okay. I think you have to be wary of it. Certainly, pick 8, 9, 10, 11, 12 is kind of where you have to start deciding if you want to take a Le'Veon Bell or Todd Gurley. The upside that Todd Gurley presents, forget the arthritic knee, if he were to be healthy, and healthy the entire season, he's easily the number one running back off the board, given his place in that offense and how prolific that offense has been the last two seasons. I like that upside, and I'm willing to gamble that even if Gurley is hurt, misses maybe four games or something like that, we're still going to get an effective and efficient guy with my back end of the first-round pick that has the upside of being the number one overall player. Le'Veon Bell is a little bit of a different situation. I think you have to be rightfully concerned about the year off, the fact that maybe he's not quite as in condition, and what his place in that Jets offense, which isn't as good, no matter how much I like Sam Darnold, isn't as good as what the Steelers were 2 years ago. That's a bit of a concern. But even in a PPR league, you almost have to guarantee with how much the Jets paid Le'Veon Bell that he's getting at least 250, 300 touches overall. And just the sheer workload, again, if he's able to do even close to what he's able to accomplish with the Steelers, those statistics don't have me worried at all. I think he's still worthy of a late first-round, early second-round pick. But, I don't blame anybody for wanting to counter that. There's a lot of quality wide receivers that you can take in the back end of the first round. Travis Kelce has been discussed in that spot as well. And I wouldn't blame anybody. It's a risk aversion game when we're talking about Le'Veon Bell and Todd Gurley. And trying to avoid messing up your first round pick is really paramount to your fantasy football success. I'm just not worried about that. I think they will do well this season. I'm comfortable getting, at least in the case of Todd Gurley, a guy that could be the number one overall running back in my fantasy league. And I feel comfortable saying the same thing about Le'Veon Bell at the Jets.
So with the running back becoming essentially the top-heavy position that it is because of the fact that so many guys are splitting carries out of the backfield, so many teams are doing it, if you're sitting there in the fifth, sixth round and beyond, who are some guys, who are some possibilities in that area?
Well, I've really, really been in love with Ronald Jones, the running back for the Buccaneers. They drafted last year in the second round. He basically played zero snaps last season. I think that was more to do with Dirk Carter being just an awful head coach as opposed to his talent. He's a fast guy. He's apparently added 15 pounds of muscle, which I actually think is a detriment to his game as opposed to his strong suit, but still a guy that seems to be prepared to overtake Peyton Barber, who shouldn't have been a starting caliber running back anyway. And he's going in rounds 8 through 12 overall, and I think he's kind of slowly rising up. I like him quite a bit as a running back 2 or flex option if you feel the need to. Darrell Henderson, I mean, again, I talk about I like Todd Gurley. Let's just say the arthritic knee is a concern. We see the Todd Gurley that we've seen in the playoffs in the Super Bowl, where C.J. Anderson is doing really well. Well, now Darrell Henderson the Rams traded up for him this draft season, he could be a guy that fills in right away. I'm not worried about Malcolm Brown, who they retained off a qualifying offer from the Lions. I'm not worried about him taking the snaps if Gurley were to miss time. And I like Henderson as a fifth or sixth round pick. Those are really guys that I've been targeting quite a bit, and frankly, it's to fill a running back 2 or running back flex spot overall. I normally have my starting 2 running backs locked down in the first 4 rounds just because I'm trying to avoid having to make mistakes, which I feel can really occur during that round 5 through 8 period at the running back spot.
Joe Bartel from rotowire.com joining us, talking fantasy football, the running back position. And I'm just thinking, Joe, Bill Belichick, the Patriots head coach, he has caused more people, I think, to throw the remotes at the TV more than any other coach in NFL history because, A, nobody can beat the Patriots and everybody's tired of it, and, B, he causes fantasy football owners so much grief because of the dreaded shared running back carries. Sometimes you never know from week to week who's going to get the football. Now, it might be a little different this year, but I'm basing my comment on what the Patriots done in the past with a timeshare at the running back position. Are there a couple of teams right now that concern you that there could be multiple running backs getting carries that could alter the fantasy value of those particular players?
Maybe I'm dating myself just a little bit. Before Bill Belichick and his RBBC, running back by committee approach, it was Mike Shanahan of the Broncos that really guy that threw a wrench into a lot of different plans. And it felt like every different year there was a 1,000-yard running back for the Broncos, but you couldn't predict it entering the season. That's how I feel about the Eagles backfield in particular. I love the selection of Miles Sanders, and I think he's going to be a great talent, but they have at least 4 guys, including the acquisition of Jordan Howard from the Bears, who could realistically get 1,000 rushing yards and 8 touchdowns. But I don't know who to pick from that backfield. There's so many different guys that I feel really uncomfortable targeting anybody from Philadelphia, and I'm hoping, I shouldn't hope this, but from my fantasy perspective, maybe an injury or just bad play makes the decision to pick one of the Eagles running backs over the other ones a little bit easier to identify. But certainly in the dog days of July, there is no clue as to which one of the 4 members of the Eagles backfield is really going to be able to stand out. The Redskins backfield also, sticking with the NFC East, another one I'm really concerned about if I'm drafting Darius Geis or Adrian Peterson. either one of them, if they were just to be the sole starting running back for that team, could be effective guys in going in the end of the second round or beginning of the third round. Geist already, he missed all of last season with an ACL injury. Now he has a hamstring injury to enter the season. And Adrian Peterson's on the very, very wrong side of 30. So I don't feel comfortable relying on either of those guys as starting running back calibers. But if one or both were to be out, then you're looking at a situation where Chris Thomas enters the picture. Ari is a really great receiving back, maybe not quite the caliber of Nyheim Hines, but I like him equally the same in that kind of capacity, who also might be running the ball more. So those two backfields, both the Eagles and Redskins, are ones that I'm completely avoiding until they kind of figure themselves out naturally.
Any potential breakout candidates that you're looking at? And then on the other side, guys maybe you've heard as possible breakout guys that you're like, they kind of pump the brakes on a little bit.
Oh, it's really easy to identify some of these people that you think are going to do well. And most of the time, it's just based off opportunity, right? You imagine they're going to be getting more playing time, and therefore it's able to project that, hey, they're going to do better overall fantasy-wise. Kenyon Drake is a really popular name right now, the running back for the Dolphins, that a lot of people are high on. Going around the fifth or sixth round overall should be, and I say this very carefully, should be the starting running back for the Dolphins. I don't know how high you guys are on the Dolphins, but I think they're going to be one of the worst teams in the NFL overall. And Kenyon Drake couldn't even beat up 35-year-old Frank Gore for the starting running back position last year. Why should I have any faith in Kenyon Drake, despite how explosive and efficient he has been on the limited touches he's getting, to be able to actually take that starting role on a Dolphins offense that at best might look like a reincarnation of a zombie? Like, I'm completely staying away from a guy like Kenyon Drake. I understand what some people are interested in him. He should get enough receptions given how bad that Dolphins defense is going to be, and they'll probably be trailing often, where maybe it makes sense that PPR league could kind of target him in that spot. But the fact that he couldn't beat up Frank Gore, no matter how much I dislike Adam Gase, is a really big concern to me. So he's the standout guy that a lot of people are valuing really highly. I think kind of like Jerick McKinnon last year before he blew out his knee in training camp for the 49ers. I get that same kind of sneaking suspicion with Kenyon Drake. On the flip side, I really love Kerryon Johnson, despite the fact that I'm a Packer fan. I think the Lions running the Lions have got a star running back on their hands. And frankly, it seems like the Patriots model has kind of influenced a lot of different franchises in the NFL. Mm-hmm. But the Lions, more so than anybody else, have been adopting that mold. And while they haven't gotten RBBC yet, Kerryon Johnson could be the star of that. He might just play his way out of the running back by committee, just how great he's been. The only concern with Kerryon, he should get around 1,000 rushing yards and probably around 300, 400 receiving yards is kind of an estimated projection for us. It's the touchdowns and lack of them. If he's able to kind of stumble into two or three more than he did last year, at least scored five times, and they have LeGarrette Blount kind of stealing a lot of those goal line touches, he's a guy that's being drafted in the end of the third, beginning of the fourth round that could be a first-round value.
Joe, you made me laugh when you mentioned Shanahan as a Bronco fan. I used to draft the second or third string Bronco running back in my last pick or one of the last picks. And one year I took Orlando Scary. And everybody's like, who's Orlando Scary? Oh, just a guy that's going to run for 1,000 yards. Nobody, everybody thought knew that. But, yeah, that was an interesting time. Mike Anderson, Orlando Scary. Shanahan always figured it out. Hey, my final question. We talked about this, Sean and I, recently. We read an NFL.com article, Best Trios Offensively in the NFL. And this article had the Browns at number 3, Mayfield and Chubb and Beckham Jr. And we thought that was a little high, a little rambunctious. And one of the reasons why, I guess we're not as high on Chubb as other experts are. He had a really good year last year. I'm wondering, where do you see Chubb going, and do you think he is a little overvalued at this time in the fantasy circles?
It's interesting. When we were putting together our RotoWire NFL magazine, I was pretty knee-deep in a lot of different mock draft preparations and just trying to get a feel of where players are going. Nick Chubb was kind of getting taken in that 8, 9, 10, 11 pick range overall in the first round. And wow. I thought that was incredibly aggressive, considering the fact that Kareem Hunt's coming back in week 10. Duke Johnson's going to still be around if they don't trade him during training camp. And they have mouths to feed in the passing game, like Odell Beckham, like Jarvis Landry, and like David Njoku. The fact that he was going 8, 9, 10 overall was pretty aggressive. Now he's kind of fallen down back in the second round, so think like pick 23 or 24 in that 30 range. And I think that's a little bit better, but I'm still staying away from him. At best, you have a starting running back for a good offense, but we don't know if it's great just yet. Again, this is the Cleveland Browns. You have the starting running back for a good offense for 10 weeks. The Browns need to prove that Kareem Hunt signing was a good one. If not for reasons for the fans, the compensatory pick format, once they sign Hunt, he is now eligible next year to give them a compensatory pick if he signs a bigger deal elsewhere. It would behoove the Cleveland staff and front office in particular to make good on that deal, which they kind of put their necks out on the line to sign someone like Kareem Hunt to get some sort of pick value back for him when he inevitably signs with a different team. So I think there's going to be every incentive in the world for the Browns to limit Nick Chubb's touches for most of the season, whether it be Duke Johnson or Kareem Hunt. And I just don't want to spend a second-round pick or a third-round pick on a guy that at best is going to be a good running back and not a great running back on a good and not great offense.
We were talking Colts in the first hour of our show, so I'll just finish with a Colts question. Marlon Mack really kind of burst on the scene, had a good year last year, over 900 yards, 9 touchdowns for the Colts. Do you think he can be at least as good, if not better, this year?
I don't see why not. I love that Colts offense last year, and I was all on board Mack. I think I had him probably 3 or 4 leagues. By the time that he actually got on the field, I'd either draft him or just was already out of the standings race. Like, it just was a difficult situation to be able to utilize him when he was hurt. Now, Jordan Wilkins kind of had to fill in and was ineffective. When Mack got back in, that was great. But really, he only started having good games. Week 7, Week 8, had over 100 rushing yards. But then Week 15, Week 17 in the wildcard game was when he really stood out. If Mack is healthy, if he's able to play all 16 games, and he has the same role that he did last year, give me every bit of that guy in the end of the second round or the beginning of the third round. I just don't know if that's going to be able to be possible. It feels like the Colts want to use their running backs in a lot of different ways. They signed Spencer Ware for a reason, whether it's either run the ball or catch the ball or provide some relief if Mack gets hurt. I think that should be just a little bit of a concern in the back of people's minds. And Hines is an excellent wide receiver option. Whether they want to have both running backs, Hines and Mack, out in the field remains to be seen. That makes me just a little bit skeptical, taking them in the second or third round. But if you wanted to have two starting running backs, Mack and then Saquon Barkley, that's kind of what you're looking at if you're taking a Barkley number one or number two overall. The guys like Mack, Devonta Freeman, or Kerryon Johnson are something you have to really kind of think about on the turn of second and third round.
Joe, tell our fantasy football fans what RotoWire can provide them.
Oh, RotoWire, I mean, there's a lot of different things RotoWire can provide. I've been really into the average draft position value. We keep track of all the major formats, the NFFC, MFL leagues. You can look at 12-team, 14-team, 10-team. We also have auction values being incorporated from most sites now. You can go on ESPN and do a mock draft and be like, all right, great, I took David Johnson, the 6th overall pick in the first round. But then people might already back out if they're in the first, or maybe they just follow through in the rest of the draft. You don't get a great idea of where people are drafting, where they're valuing certain players. By using RotoWire's average draft position formula and keeping track of all the different major leagues out there that make you put some skin in the game when you're doing drafts, whether it's best ball or just regular drafts, that's kind of a tool I've been utilizing quite a bit. As we get closer to the draft season, that ADP value is going to solidify itself, and it's definitely something that I'm going to keep track of. And it makes it a lot easier. They have some green arrows and red arrows. It's like the stock market. You know who's all going up and who's all going down.
If I could just sneak in one more question, Joe, and you can be really brief. We've kept you too long. But just for fantasy football players who've done the 6 points for receiving rushing touchdown and 4 for quarterback passing touchdown, and really haven't expanded beyond that, is there a style of player or a format you would suggest a league to try this year?
I'm going to answer it differently than I might expect. I would suggest an auction league format, which means you are spending fake money, not real money. I've had that clarification on Twitter a few times. Fake money on players that you want. Like, this is a situation where you could go ahead and get Saquon Barkley and Ezekiel Elliott on your team, which would not be possible whatsoever in any sort of standard snake format. In an auction league, you can do that. There's a lot of different strategy, and I think that's the part about fantasy football I love the most, is the strategical elements that you're incorporating. Doing an auction draft is the most strategical of all fantasy formats out there, and it's one that I will recommend and scream at the top of the hill as loud as I can, because I think all of America needs to at least try it once and see if it's something that they'd like.
Great idea. Joe Bartel, fantasy football expert for RotoWire.com. Their fantasy football magazine is out. And, of course, RotoWire.com for the latest information. Joe, great catching up with you once again. Hopefully we can talk to you again soon.
Yeah, I appreciate coming on. Thanks for having me.
You bet. Joe Bartel, RotoWire.com. That is some pretty good knowledge on the running back position. A lot of choices at the top. Who is the number one pick? Saquon Barkley probably will be the number one. Kamara's interesting. Your guy, Zeke Elliott, is a choice up there. So I think there's probably 4 guys at the top to choose from, and then there's maybe that next tier starting. But if you have one of the first 4 picks in the draft, I just don't see how you can go really anywhere except with those top four guys. That's a pretty good place to start. I'm talking about Barkley, Elliott, McCaffrey, and Kamara. I just don't see a wide receiver or a quarterback that's worth being ahead of any of those four.
Yeah, the pool of running back, true number one running back options, has really thinned over the last few years because of the way NFL teams are using backs, multiple guys. But I agree, if you're up there at the top, that is the number one priority, I think, is getting one of those number one running backs.
Interesting player from my standpoint is Josh Jacobs, who went to the Raiders. That might be a spot where he's going to get a lot of opportunities there with Mr. Gruden. He's Sean Steyers. I'm Darren Pritchett. Hope you enjoyed some fantasy football conversation. Coming up, it's Rapid Fire on WSBT.
Rapid Fire starts now on Budweiser's weekday sports beat on 96.1 WSBT. Here is Sean Steyers and Darren Pritchett.
Darren, fill in the blank on this first Rapid Fire question. Tonight, the Cubs optioning Addison Russell to AAA Iowa today is blank.
First, I'm trying to find Joe Flacco where he is in the quarterback rankings. He's 32nd, so he's not even like a starter in the NFL by fantasy standards. Good grief. You know, Addison Russell, this is just a hotbed topic. Before the season started, we both had our says with the domestic violence charges against Russell. I didn't feel like he deserved to be a Chicago Cub anymore. Had there been video of the incident, like there were in some of the NFL cases, he wouldn't have been a Chicago Cub. But I think the fact there was no video evidence allowed him to be with the team. Yeah. I do respect what Theo Epstein and the organization did. They felt like they were going to try to give him a second chance and make him a better person. So with that being said, he needed to perform. And the last couple of weeks, he admitted not knowing the signs. There was a situation in the game where the infield is back with a runner on third base. He got a ground ball and he threw home. The defense was set up to throw to first. He did not do what they asked him to do. He has not been a great offensive player since they won the World Series in 2016. Addison Russell is not a starting player in the majors. Either is Albert Almora right now. They have two positions that do not have starting caliber major league players in their spots. Russell deserved to go to the minors from the standpoint. I think he needed a wake-up call, which I can't believe I'm saying after what he's gone through. But he was just mentally fragile at the major league level, and you can't have that. You're playing at the highest level, and I think the Cubs can do better at the deadline. You'll see them probably get an upgrade at second base, and I would be shocked if Russell is back with the team. Maybe not until they expand the rosters to 40. I just don't see anything positive about his game at the present time.
Yeah, I mean, he's just a mental mistake waiting to happen, it seems like. And Joe Maddon said that part of the reason they're sending him down is for him to kind of clear his head and work some things out. It did work for Kyle Schwarber to an extent a couple years ago when they sent him down. There's obviously no trade value for Addison Russell because you don't send a player down a week before the trade deadline if there's any hope of getting something back for him. So I just don't see how it turns around for him. And like you mentioned, bringing him back up in September, I don't know if maybe he hasn't played his last game as a Chicago Cub. It's just really baffling what we've seen from him this year when you have those opportunities and he has not seemed like a focused Major League Baseball player. Just a 733 OPS this season, and it's actually been a little bit better since the All-Star break to bring it up to 733 overall. So I think it was kind of a long time coming. It was a move they had to make, and you outlined it well because they're a team that's leading the NL Central still and trying to close things out against the Giants right now in the ninth inning. They're contending, but they have two spots on the field that are not up to par at all.
Well, they activated Wilson Contreras from the injured list. Russell was sent to Iowa. If I can just tweak the conversation a little bit, with the fact that they are in search of better play at second base, Robel Garcia has given them a little boost. Bodie has not hit recently. Russell, we just documented. Does it say anything about Ian Happ? the fact that he has not been brought up? Is this the Cubs not seeing improvement in Hap? Not necessarily he's a guy you want playing second base every day from a defensive standpoint, but a guy you could put in there 3-4 times a week and probably could get by with it. So the fact that he's not an option right now, A, is that a sign the Cubs don't feel like he can make a difference? Or B, they don't want to bring him up because they fear he would have a week of poor hitting, which could alter his trade value, because he would seem to be one of the more likely candidates for the Cubs to move. So if you bring him up and he struggles, what does that do to his value? So I'm trying to figure out, do they just not believe in Hap anymore? Is he not that much better than what they can do at second base with Garcia and Bodie? Or is this them holding back Ian Hap in fear of hurting his trade value, which can't be off the chart right now? He's been in AAA the entire year.
Yeah.
He's a swing and a miss guy at the major league level who walks and hits home runs. So I wish I had a better handle on it. My gut tells me I don't think they want to mess with his trade value, whatever it is right now, by bringing him up. After the deadline, you might see him as an option. I mean, he is more of an outfielder. There's no doubt about it. But I think they're just ready to throw anything at the wall right now at second base.
Well, Ian Happ last year as a Chicago Cub in the major leagues in 142 games and 387 at-bats, struck out 167 times. So 387 at-bats, 167 strikeouts. At AAA so far this year, 355 at-bats, 113 strikeouts. And his on-base is just 361. He's hit for a little bit of power, but it's pretty much along the lines of what you're talking about. Swing and miss quite a bit, and he just, and honestly, just looking at his numbers, because I've tried to pay attention over the last few weeks to see where he is, because you hear some people saying, well, why not bring Ian Happ up? I mean, his .239 batting average and .361 on base have gone up over the last few weeks. So he's hitting a little bit better maybe right now, but overall, just offensively, he has not had a good season at all at the AAA level.
Joel Reuter, MLB analyst for Bleacher Report. This is what he had to say. I'm not sure of this guy's track record. I'm just bringing up the thought. He writes about Hap. Things have picked up as of late. 327 average, 435 on base, 635 OPS in July. That surge, coupled with his track record of production at the major league level amid the strikeouts and his remaining control through the 2023 season, should give him trade value similar to a top 100 prospect.
Huh. Well,
I think that's fair. I think that's okay. I'm okay with that particular thought. He's not going to bring you a top-of-the-line starting pitcher. He's going to be a part of a package that could get you that, or possibly an impact center fielder, but he's not going to be just a single piece. It's going to take multiple pieces with Hap to get that impact guy, possibly for second base or center field or left field for that matter.
Well, and now you have to also wonder, with Wilson Contreras coming back, do you have Caratini and Maldonado as well, who they just traded Mike Montgomery for? So you've got three catchers right now at the major league level. Yeah. So when they made that trade for Maldonado, my first curiosity before I found out that Contreras got hurt, and now Contreras is obviously back 10 days later, is Victor Caratini potential trade bait, considering they traded Montgomery for another catcher? Is he somebody who could be moving soon?
Maybe for a reliever. I don't think there's much value in Caratini. He's a switch hitter. He can play. He had to play first today because Anthony Rizzo got ejected for arguing balls and strikes. I just don't think he can get you a whole lot. Maybe a veteran reliever of some sort, but I just can't imagine you could get a whole lot for Caratini. He might be just a part of one of those packages we're talking about.
Yeah, and that's, we've got a week to go before the trade deadline, so stay tuned. We'll find out plenty here coming in the near future. Okay, Darren, we were talking about the wide receiver group for Notre Dame in the first hour. So which Irish sophomore wide receiver will have the biggest impact for the Irish this season? Braden Lindsay, Lawrence Keys, Kevin Austin, Joe Wilkins?
Well, I hope it's Kevin Austin. But will it be?
Yeah, that's the question.
Well, You know, I'm going to go with Austin just on a hunch that he figures out things away from the field and on the practice field and can be a guy that can handle the traits and do everything the proper way trait-wise to get in the good graces of the head coach and the offensive coaching staff. I think he has a lot of upside, so I'll just roll the dice on Austin.
That's kind of the direction I'm leaning as well. He's the only one of the four who had any stats last year, 5 catches, 90 yards. If I ranked him based on what we saw in the spring, I'd probably go 1A, 1B, Keys and Austin. I thought they both had really good springs, and then Lindsey and Wilkins after them. And I just think that I really like Keys, but he could be a year away from being a more consistent contributor after Chris Finke is gone. And we've talked about the traits with Kevin Austin. Maybe he's going to have to sit a little bit toward the start of the season like Dexter Williams did last year. Different reason, but maybe he's going to have to sit. So, I mean, but even a couple of years ago after Kevin Stepherson had to sit, he was still the third leading receiver, had 5 touchdown grabs mm-hmm. for Notre Dame. So I'm going to go with Kevin Austin as well.
Okay.
All right. Are we out of time? I know we're running short here. You guys have your pregame in 7 minutes, so I'll leave it up to you what you want to do.
Yeah, we should probably take a break, I think, and step aside for a second. I'll just bring up one Chicago Cub note, and it's in regard to being on the road and what it could mean to the team's chances for winning the NL Central. We'll do that next on WSBT. Sean and Darren with you, Sports Beat on WSBT Radio, final segment of the day. Quick thoughts on the Chicago Cubs. They lost in 13 innings last night, 5-4, as Pablo Sandoval hit a home run in the 13th off Brad Brock. And Yu Darvish, 6 innings, 6 hits, 4 earned runs, 6 strikeouts. Today, the Cubs just closed out the Giants 4-1. Craig Kimbrell gave up a couple hits in the 9th inning, but recorded the save. And so the Cubs pick up a victory today. But they have lost 8 consecutive road series. They have lost 16 of their last 22 on the road. And right now, they've got a 1-game lead over St. Louis, who plays later tonight. The Brewers won today to stay 2 back. But as you look at the future, the Cubs, 61 games left, 33 of those on the road. So their road play could be a deciding factor.
Big time.
In who wins the Central and who wins possibly a wild card. I didn't think the wild card was possible for the Central, but there is now an outside chance as the pack has come back to them. Plus St. Louis and has played a little better. Milwaukee is a little hit and miss right now. But an interesting stat, let me just pass this along really fast. Now, Almora hit a home run today, but entering today, Albert Almora, he hit 5th in the lineup last night with a .237 average, a .272 on base, and an OPS of .650. Ugh. If you go to FanGraphs, they have what is called weighted runs created plus. And stadium affected, it's one of those where they formulate how you create runs for your team. 100 is the league average. Almora right now is at 65. And when you look up the numbers, a player with a 75 WRC plus is poor. 60 is awful. So he's 5 above awful. Now, he had a home run today. But I said this earlier, and I'll say it again. As of right now, he is not a starting player in the Major League level.
Yep. I agree.
And the Cubs need to upgrade that particular position, and I will not be shocked if that is not an upgrade at the trade deadline.
Two other things that happened today real quick in that Cubs game. Chris Bryant left the game, middle of the game. I think it was the 6th inning with right knee soreness. And Anthony Rizzo ejected after arguing a strike 3 call at the plate. He was walking back to the dugout and got ejected.
Yeah, I think he was wrong. It looked like a pretty good pitch.
It was close.
Yeah, I thought it was. But yeah, Bryant's a big concern. His WAR is up over 4 right now.
Mm-hmm.
Even though he may not have those ginormous numbers, he's getting on base. And right now, again, an elite player in the National League for the Chicago Cubs, who beat the Giants today by a score of 4-1. Sports Beat brought to you by Budweiser. Great times are waiting. Grab some Buds by Train Heating and Cooling and the Food Bank of Northern Indiana. Hunger is a story we can end. Find out how at feedindiana.org. Sean, we'll talk to you tomorrow.
Will do.
That'll do it for Sports Beat. Cubs baseball next on WSBT.